different circumstances, their life would be totally different from mine. And I can only tell you, this is sort of what happened to me and how I got into the things I do. Just for what might be general interest to you, because I don't think, for example, that you have to have any particular kind of way of life to be an artist. I mean, my heroine along those lines, Emily Dickinson, whom on paper very little happened. This way, picaresque adventures, you know, you could go out in the backyard and see a blade of grass and quirk off a month off of that, you know, a bee fly in the room, or a fly, something like that. Nor do I think that I have to qualify, because I talk a lot about working from the inside of the subject, which I tend to do. I explain what I mean about that. I see art students when I go to a town where there's an art department. They all come down to the circus where I'm working, and they're outside us and they're looking at us like we're a phenomena. You know, it's something visible, it's something over there. It's a different kind of experience. It's not. But if you're working with it, you're working from the inside. You see what I mean? And so, almost everything I've ever painted, I've worked from the inside, from like my paintings about war situations, you know, that came from being in the army, partly. And so I want to make it very clear that I don't think you have to have that kind of experience to be an authentic artist or make an authentic version of the thing. For example, Red Bear, the Badge of Courage, which is one of the best war novels, was written by somebody who's never even in the army. So imagination can substitute for experience, but also experience can be a very valid jumping off point. And it's just been my nature to work out of experience. Well, partly out of experience and partly out of art, because I think everybody works out of art to some degree. My army experience is 4 years of that way. Probably not as influential on those war paintings I've done as seeing, sitting an hour and a half in a movie and watching Hell's Angels or a big parade or movies like that, which emotionally hit me harder in one way than being 4 years in the army. So it's a blend of reality, a blend of experience, a blend of fantasy, and so forth, that this is from. Come from and we work, and so I'll just try to give you some of the background. Would you mind? Thank you. And you have to remember to put the light. This is a painting I just recently completed for the music department up in Ames. And I'm just showing you this and a couple of others to give you the idea that I don't work. I've been sort of, everybody gets stuck with something if they live long enough, and I've been stuck with the fact that I work with circus subject matter and show business subject matter, and a lot of people think to the exclusion of everything else, and that's not true. I mean, I work with, I'll show you some other slides. And this one, particularly, is just music, you know. Those of you know my daughter, I could have this soon learned, you know. Nobody said anything about using the same person 4 times in the painting. I've kind of been intrigued lately. Since going back to the Renaissance, I've taken commissions. My association of commissions, going back to earlier when I worked for the government, for the Federal Works Project, things like that. And if you went to a post office and something like that, they'd all lay a big trip on you about what it had to be about or the things. So the way I've been taking commissions lately is say, look, I'll do this on this theme, which is the theme that I work with, circuit, music, whatever. And if you don't like it, you don't have to take it. Because I don't want to feel like I have to take it. So it gives me a chance to do what I want to do in the painting. I'm doing a couple right now for the hospital. And do it at home, because where do you put these great big canvases, you know, when you get through with them? And the Renaissance painters did that. It occurred to me, so what's, you know, why not try? At this point, I feel fair enough that it doesn't inhibit me at all by having this effect of Simon. I brought another one in the time to show it. Maybe I'm on memory. No, we swung back in here. Here we go. Now we go. This was one that I did for the Minneapolis Star Tribune newspaper. And they said, you can do anything you want. You can do circus or anything you want. We just want one of your paintings. And that's not intense. That's my wife's father was a newspaper man, and my wife was a newspaper person at one time. And I remembered the time of day when they're setting that hot type and the kind of agony that those people went through, the extreme pressures they went through. It was a kind of a hell in the office for half an hour until they set the paper up. And one of the things I've always worked with has been this collision between human and machine, industrial age and all that. And that just seemed to be perfect. So I said, what the heck, I'll do a newspaper picture. And I've never done one before since. But in this case, newspapers were just the motif. Now, I have you've heard me talk about this maybe before, but I feel the motif and subject matter are two different things. Motif is the nominal thing you're working with. In this case, newspapers are number four of symphony orchestra warming up or something. But the subject matter things is really the same. I think that an artist's subject matter can be applied to different motifs, but remains constant as it develops through its life or matures. For example, Faulkner, you could say nominally was writing about Mississippi in a certain period in the 30s, but actually he was writing about the conflicts in the human heart and the human mind. And that was his real subject matter. He could have written it in Falltown, Massachusetts, had he lived there and had the same. It's just that it was given a particular flavor by where he grew up and the substance of the look of that part of the country. I've also done, this is an old example, I've also done a lot of work based on World War, or war. I'll show you a few of those. That's a paper piece in the back. This is when I was in Davenport, some of you have seen. When I lived in London, I used to walk by and see the Chelsea pensioners sitting out there and they had veterans, and it was kind of something about outdoor furniture. Indoor furniture put outside, which you see at jumble sales and Saturday mornings in the United States. Autumn, they put the furniture outside and they're vulnerable about it. And exploring, of all things, polar exploration is exactly one of the most exotic motifs. I don't know if anybody else has ever worked with that. And the art, the so-called art world, and the National Geographic world, travel world and all that. But it served me as a metaphor. But really getting back to my boyhood, I think the show business has been the predominant interest in my work, the thing that most turns me on, and I never seem to get away from. The first drawing I ever made as a kid that I found when I was about seven that I remember was about the circus. And I've always liked the dramatic and theatrical. And religion like this was not the kind of religion I was brought up in. My father was a Baptist, next to being a minister. He's a YMCA secretary. We had palm trees, little boy in the chorus square with the white smocks, and it was all very respectable, no hellfire and all that. I was actually bored and kids with it. And we'd sneak off to revivals, and the one I liked best was a guy who had a stuffed horse on a rocking device. And he wore a big cowboy hat and he'd get on top of him. It would rock and he'd whip it. And it was labeled Sin on the side. He was riding Sin. At the end of every night's service, he would ask people to come down and get saved when he was doing tent shows. And I got saved seven times. I figured I covered a lot of later problems. But this kind of, these kinds of evangelical churches, well, no, that's not a very good slide. I remember going down to Mississippi. This was all brought back to me very dramatically last year, last spring, because Greenville, Mississippi, where I grew up, was a very unusual town. It produced a lot of writers, a lot of artists. Sun House, the blues singer from there, a lot of writers. So we all came back on the aegis of the community and gave talks and showed our work and everything. And I went back to all this kind of travel through all the memories I had as a boy. And I remember being down in the valley and seeing the Holy Rollers. And they chained the guy up and threw him in the water because he claimed that his faith would get him out. And he just sunk straight down. And all he saw was bubbles. We sit there and watch for the longest. And those kinds of religious experiences were more interesting to me than a straight sermon that I listened to. I also attended black churches a lot on my uncle's place that I was so enamored in the music and the general dramatic qualities, which has influenced my work a lot. Movies, this is my favorite. There are a lot of movies that influenced me, Frankenstein, movies like that, but King Kong I saw, I think, 37 times before I was 17 years old, and I knew all the lines by heart, I still do. And I'd con all my friends into playing King Kong, we had the garage door, and I'd break out through the big doors. I was a tiny kid, I was really underweight, doing that, and short. And thanks to all these other guys, but I was con on them. And the dramatic kind of serials that they had in the kind of continued next week series, like this one. really inflamed my mind about gorilla suits. And so I finally ended up with this one, which I think is rather nice gorilla suit. This is before gorilla suits were in, and they're kind of obvious now. There have been so many movies with gorilla suits. But it really stood out in those days. Nobody else had them.
That's your
girl suit? Yeah, that's my girl suit. I started bringing it in today. It's a beautiful suit. The question is, I'll show you how I used it later. I listened to a lot of music, both the kind of white country-type fiddle music that you hear a lot of now. It's art form now. It wasn't then. It's such a great. Particularly blues musicians, black blues musicians who played every week on a Saturday down to Cleveland Abbey. And still strong blues. You know, Mississippi has the strongest black blues tradition in any state. You know, from the Delta where I grew up. And I did, that's an early painting I did. I think it's backward. Yeah, it's backward. But I did that when I was in college. It's the kind of thing I doing and trying to use that subject. So even then I was using subject matter for my life and then. And then the marching bands from various societies and so forth, which are now turning into cliche to everybody knows about the New Orleans type bands and all that, but when you hear it in your hometown and you're a kid and it's so almost like a weekly event, it becomes really part of your life. And to this day, I can hear the sound of those bands. You know. It turned me on to music, which I've never given up on. I still love to play. And some bands like this, the Territory Band, Black Territory Band, just absolutely fantastic bands. And bands with, of course, some big names now, Randy Kirk, names like that. But in those days, we jumped in to make a living because big bands were having a hard time. And my father was a friend of somebody who ran a nightclub, and I got to hear all these bands. When I was just a kid, I'd be in, I'd sit behind the scenes and check that out. All this kind of thing. As a painting, we hear that it is based on that situation. There was a band called Boots and Their Buddies. The artwork that influenced me was like this. Because I grew up where there weren't any paintings. I know if you ever saw a painting. If I saw one watercolor, my aunt did a flower. And we saw posters a lot, and there were those kind of cheap pulp magazines like Astounding Story, Amazing Story, Pretty Wonder. Magicians, posters on the television. These things really influenced me quite heavily in my work. You know, a sense of pattern, which you find in posters and lettering and work. I still love to do that. But if you feel, how do you do a painting? I didn't get some sort of lettering. And then I went to 1933 in the World's Fair. My father took me up there and took me to the Chicago Art Institute, and I was converted overnight to whatever that kind of stuff was. I had no idea who did it, when they did it, or how they did it, but the huge El Greco, I remember if you've seen it there. Kluge de Chavon, the Fishman's family is there, Song of the Lark. She was a great time, it's still one of my favorite things. But there's a whole bunch of things like that, and I just decided that's it, I'm a painter. I was 13 years old. I started painting then. And fortunately, in my junior high school years, I had an art history teacher. He was not down in Mississippi, but junior high, I had an art history teacher. And she showed slides of Alaska from everybody, I began to find my way into it a little bit, that there was such a thing as art. This lady, David McConaughey, I'm not going to talk about some of the show business experiences I had that led into my use of the subject matter. Now, first of all, you can see this is a very difficult subject matter. If you don't mind being sensational, well, let's say, you know Ed Paschke's work? Ed, to me, works with sensational subject matter as part of his aesthetic. And I'm not saying anything against this at all, I'm just saying that he'll take things and try to play up the fluorescent side of them, you know, the strident siren side of the city side of it. Because I was always interested coming out of Kluge de Chavon and painters like that. I was interested in more classical art, but nevertheless, I knew this subject matter so well. And I tried to put the two together. It's been a strange blend, a very formal, very classical presentation of a very exotic subject matter. In some cases, I never think of exotic, of course, because I knew the people involved. I worked for this lady, Baby McClanicoe. She got her name, Baby Ruth, because that was her favorite food. And I was her gopher, and I played also outside of her tip or valley. I would play drum, door, trumpet, even when I played both then. And try to get crowd and all that, and then I'd run around and get things for her. She was a very exotic woman. That chair she was sitting in was actually a chemical toilet, because she weighed too much to get up. Couldn't use a regular tire. Slept in the back of the truck because the only trailers they had there were not heavy because she couldn't get into. Very interesting woman. Here she is again on the right, or center rather, and the lady with her is Dolly Dimples, who was later turned out to be a great writer. And they were trying to see who appeared to be the first to make 1,000 pounds. A real incredible robbery. They didn't just eat all the time trying to put an extra weight. She died, unfortunately, of a tumor being removed in her thigh in the hospital bed. Operating table collapsed under her weight. So they made a second version of that. about 4x4s or something real fast, and she vomited, and she just having to turn over, she asphyxiated in her own vomit and so forth. Now, it's very hard to say why that subject appealed to me. Still to this day, I don't know how you handle it. Somehow it had to do with gluttony, the celibate sins and all that, and the kind of excessive flesh. And I found some sort of metaphor in it. And so I wasn't not doing it just to do a fat woman, a novelty, Also, there's a certain beauty to the forms, and I used to love those jewel baby outfits and the pink satin thing. I feel like it's a look of that pink you get in women, used to have women's slip. There's a painting I did based on, I took a few pounds off there. That was done a few years ago. Also, this figure is another big figure used because the macrocephalic or pinheads, as they call them in the business. You see the movie Freaks? I took care of those two pinheads for a while. My job was to be their steward, or whatever you want to call it, babysitter. And they sat in these beautiful parole poses. And I use those figures a lot, but there's a certain kind of innocence, that kind of sweetness you can quite often get with retarded people. Those people that worked in those kinds of shows, those sideshows, I was first exposed to in when I was 12 or so. And they're what they call store shows, which were side shows I could see with carnivals, except they were inside stores. And they'd stay there as long as they were doing any business. And they all each had their little platform around, and you'd walk around and they'd do their trick and then sell your souvenir. And so I worked there for a month or so, cleaning up and taking care of the two pinheads and things like that. And every time a new show would come to town, I'd have a recommendation to the license. I did this for a long time. It was the most educational thing I ever did in my life. Because these people who were considered so abnormal in the normal society, I got to know as individuals, and that soon dropped away. They were people you liked and people you didn't like. It doesn't matter if they're midgets or giants or other people or snake eaters or handlers or whatever. And it, to me, took away any excuse for any kind of division of mankind based on race or religion or physical properties or gender or anything like that. It just went back to the core of the essential humanity of the people. And that changed my whole life, because growing up in the South as I did at that time, you would hear things that were negative about other races or religions or whatever, and I suppose it's true everywhere, but particularly that time in the South. And that just cured me. It just got it out of my system altogether. And I'll never take anything for it. The vision was also very fascinating too, but a lot of variety and another snake lady. These are a couple of things I don't take care of, but I put them in because of subject association. This is a litho I did at Tamu. And this man, Bernie Goins, the tattooed man. The tattooing has gotten to be kind of a cliche, too. There's a movie of a deal on tattooing, like the Ray Bradbury story. But I did do some work with it. Bernie's a very strange man. He always wore a hat. But just later, he was bald. And he wore a cap over it. He would never show the public his head. And I thought he had some mysterious symbols or cabalistic thing or something obscene or some subversive or something on top of his head. But we got to really know you and trust you and show you the problem there. And it was just a tiger, so he just his best heart. And he didn't want to show it to the public. It's so amazing. But, Cindy, I got working with that. I don't have many slides of that. There's one. That's a monochrome. That's another based on Mildred.
That's a monochrome as well.
This lady had a lot of influence on me in this strange way, too. She was a Jewish woman who had run away from Europe to get away from Hitler and was from a middle class family, but got herself tattooed from top to bottom and wore hair, let her hair go down to touch the ground. I was madly in love with her. She didn't know it, of course. She was in her 30s, not her 40s. And I was, you know, it's from a distance. But she was so different from the girls in Greenville, Mississippi. She was exotic, I'll tell you. She added to that her ability to swallow neon tubes, very, very difficult thing to perform because if they break inside your chest, you've had it, like powdered glass. And she had herself tattooed with a little sun right here, and it's very thin right at the sternum, so as she swallowed the yellow tube, the sun dried through her chest. And she gave me a photograph. And when my father died, I was going through some trunks and pondered and kind of revived all this. So sometimes, you know, 25 years, that was another variation of it. This is another kind of activity for us all. I love, still do, the homemade quality of everything. You just can't go down and buy these things, you know. Or these kind of suits you can't buy. So they're like a green velvet with a little satin trim. Real nice clothes. The minstrel, that's backwards. That painting is done on, based on the black minstrels that used to play through the South. Fantastic talent. It'd be like Rabbit Foot Minstrel, Silas Green from New Orleans, Bardex, all those kind of minstrels. And they had talent, but probably the racial prejudice of that time, they had talent that was absolutely tops, but could not perform in situations of power. And so they were forced to work through these agencies like these traveling shows. And just incredible to read the biographies of many great black performers. And many of them had to go through this system. But it was a real bonus for whoever got to see the show, because it was a really talented show. This is based on that kind of thing. Willard the Wizard was my hero. He was a regional magician. Remember, he was in the office to go to New York and all that kind of thing, because he was a magician. He was considered to be one of the top magicians that was based in the Blackstone. He liked the tarot, he liked to play on the canvas. And so he kept coming from the South, west, and the South. And he was quite an alcoholic, which may have been his money, I don't know. But he had four sons, they all looked like him. And so if he was drunk, one of the other sons would be murdered that night. And his worst escapade was when he ran inside of a boiler and got into a welded shut, he was going to escape from him, passed out. But he was set up on top of the marquee and throw whiskey bottles at the public when he went into the tent. Anyway, I used to carry his trunks and stuff like that, and this is the kind of, this is Mysterious Smith, another one of the musicians that I admired. That's his stage. I did a painting based on that image, which you see. Magic still really appeals to the idea of magic. You feel like projection beyond rational, that's some sort of faith beyond the rational. I mean, I know how all the conjuring is done, most of it. It's the idea of the magic. These kinds of musicians like Powell really no talent, particularly beyond his desire to be a musician. Of course, I loved all these things too. Props. This is a litho I did at Tanner based on. I had a letter from one guy who used to sign his name. They always hold sacred there. It's some kind of thing of an admiration to art. But this seemed like a good title for it. This is the mysterious Smith. The wives usually hated it. They didn't want to do the show game if they were home with a rose covered hat. And when they were approaching middle age, they were supposed to jump in and out in boxes and squash things and that sort of thing. Share rooms with pigeons and that. But none of these guys made much money or anything. So a few did at Thurston and all that. But they were good artists. This is another thing based on exchanging a magic. It doesn't look like a magic. Magician, she didn't get a card trick. Six kids. And that's the way my mind works on subject matter. I had a dance band for years, and I used to play the Veterans Hospital. It's free, you know, to entertain the veterans and all that. But that's where the beds came from, and all the people. And then having been a magician, I extended it to that. And so the two all kind of came together in my head. And that's my own show I had out on the road. I decided I had to do it myself. At that time, Big Stage Magic was out. It's in now. You know, Doug Ewing and all those people are all over the place now. That show, but you couldn't go out as a musician at the middle. So they took out what they called spook shows. And what you would do is horror theme it. And then Lindy could use all these sawing through people and chopping people up and levitating. You gave it a kind of theme of horror. You carried your own movie along with it. I had friends down here from Wilson. And we played all over the Midwest. At this point, now looking back, I can't say directly how that fed into my art. Except if I kept the material, I guess something that's left for you that I missed. I mean, it looked like H.C. Western or something. But this one visibly shrinks the woman's head. I think it's so shrinking her head. And I wish I had kept it all now. But you think of it as all my copper objects. And the real experience, that. The whole thing was written up by two or three novelists and short story writers, very bold and writing like that, bold about it. But I told other people who did have real picaresque, strange problems there with that show. The adventures in little towns, back to Anamosa, Iowa. The theater had no way to get from the front of the theater to the back, and we had a skeleton in the front lobby which we needed for later in the show. And I'm wearing this outfit. My assistant had bolt sizes and everything, funny face car and all that. So we're going outside the theater to pick up this thing. We meet an all-night waitress coming around the corner. And she just fainted. Right? And we put her upside the tree and, you know, stopped her face, like forgetting we had this makeup on, because we still think of it in this work clothes. And she saw us and just fainted. So we went and got the manager said, "You better go and take care of it, woman." He got excited. We laid down the coffin, and he got excited and fell over a railing, landed flat on his back in the coffin. And this got us all upset. And that night after the blow, the final illusion, we forgot and left the girl who worked for the show inside one of these illusions, and the space She looked like she wasn't in there, so you can see it had to be a very small spot. And they got all the way back to the hotel and everything, and where's the girl? We had to get that same manager out of bed to let us in. She was screaming hysterical. It was really wild. It went on like that day after day after day. The thing that really got my heart, won my heart, were the little shows, the little circuses. What they call mud shows, because they're in mud so much, or high grass shows, because they can't afford the money to cut the grass. And so you see, they're a little cut off after your knees. And you have, when I use the girls, please, I'm not using that time with women and ladies and girls. That's what everybody called the show, the girls. And the girls would come out in butterfly outfits or something with very high shoes, these things kind of things, and they were staggering through the grass, trying to look graceful, you know what I mean? And it was so kind of like Lestrada for me, always, everything about it. But the backyard, for example, where you congregate before the spectacle. So called the show I was working with called Clark and Walters, they had 15 people on the whole show working on it. And so they want to put a spectacle on, you know, the circus song parade. And they had Smokey Joe, I couldn't find a side of him, which I used to share his cigarettes with his camel. He'd pick him up from the camel, take him up. He was a real character. They had a lame hyena. They had a lion with a urinary problem. One camel, an elephant, and few assorted people, and he tried to put on this spectacle, this parade, showing bravely, you know. And I always, it was so wonderful and touching and marvelous to see the people in the backyard trying to psych themselves up to go in there in front of a thousand people and present something. This is a relatively big show compared to what I'm talking about. That's why I really like that kind of show more than I do the sort of the ringing bell, secret production. This is Tom Mix, the cowboy, who had a large influence on my life. My father ran the YMCA there in Greenville, and it was closed on Sunday because of Sunday blue laws. The shows couldn't play either on Sunday. That show often landed there on the Sunday. So my father because he liked show business, told Mix that they could bring the actors, the performers down to have the wife for the day. Well, these were before Airstream trailers with all the showers and the TV and everything. And this really turned them on. And Mix was very appreciative, so he said he would take me with him on the road for a while. Now, I was very young, and so my father said, well, he didn't know the circumstances well enough. So he, the lovely man that he was, took me every day, drove me to the next town, and he went back when he came and drove me over to the next town and for about a week when I was going out on a show in a very tender age. I'll never forget my father for that, and of course I'll never forget Tom Mix because he was a superstar. He was like bigger than Steve Reeves or somebody. Anyway, he was every kid's hero, and the following year the show was coming back to Greenville, and I got the flu, which was a disaster, because I was sure I was going to get the red carpet and everything. And instead I wouldn't even be able to go to the circus. I had a very high temperature, and I was lying there in the bed feeling sorry for myself, and a vision appeared in my bedroom door. White outfit like his old friend was, and like it was Tom Mix. We stopped by because he drove right by our house on the way to the circus park. And he just stopped in to say hello and thanks like that. And the kids at school would never believe me. It was so funny this spring because I went back to that school and to that house and to that line, you know, saw all those things. And it all seems so small, it seems so big. Anyhow, this is 35 years later, or whatever it is, Tom Mix
having your point of this painting, if this sort of bubbles up, these things are going way, way, way back. I don't work directly from nature very much. I work out of memory of nature, second-hand glimpses and peaks of nature, sweet looks. Now, this kind of thing, what they call a valley platform, was in a sense an art form in itself, but it also was, to me, a very fascinating and exotic world. At first, when I was a kid, and later when I stood there in the ticket box, these little tickets and everything, I saw it from the other side. I saw the public out there, and they were looking at us. And so I looked at it from both sides, out and the in, and in the out. And I don't know if you've got around to see these kind of shows much now, but you know, they bring out the action of the sideshow and put them on the ballot platform for the idea of luring people in, called building a tip. And then you have something, you have a blow-off, somebody does something, like a big girl with these red cross and she's tied up with something, she escaped at the end, or somebody swallowed one soul or something like that. And very strange, and very strange lighting and all that. And that, those valleys, I almost constantly, there's another constant source of public matter for me. There's something about the space that we confined within a small compass, it's like this microcosm in a sense. And the public down here and the people up here, and then the art behind it all is not often thought how strange, but our painted paintings are platforms that I made, the banners that I painted, and friends of mine, and I looked there myself and painted paintings of this, and it's very abstract. And I hit another, I took a friend of mine last summer. You can see through the years, just like everything, a lot of attrition. The valleys are getting smaller and smaller, and you put deeper and less colorful, shall we say, character. And that's why those little tiny paintings I did based on that. I got known that about 5 or 6 inches. And then, well, they don't know my work. I tend to work either large or small. Very hard to get away from the other side. I work 5 or 6 inches, 5 or 6 feet, no problem. I'm getting 30 by 40, that's the problem. And I'm trying to get away from that. But it's so nice to be able to meet you with that. Now, this is just reason. That man, you see. This picture was taken while I was having my heart attack. Literally, actually. They all came over, and this is a platform that I had from my circus, banners I had when I had my circus. And these are my costumes, this big banner, and this huge man over the way, and my dangerous shade, and this kind of thing. And I had made it, I thought I was going to go back, I hadn't used models for 30 years or so. So I made drawings first of how I wanted everybody. And that's really super important part of my life. I made drawings, I picked out the costume, and I made sharp marks on me where everybody stood. And then I kind of proposed, and I moved people around by a different way. The cave portion of just taking a picture, you know. But it really wasn't feeling very good. And I've used these as a basis for some paintings. Now, I wish I could show you a slide of it. To my mind, it's interesting thing I've done it with a kind of mixture of all kinds of things. I quite often depend on images from the outside a lot. And in this case, there's not a thing from the outside really in me. I didn't need to collect or people I didn't know or things I owned. Cards that I either used in magic or banners from my show. Everything in there is entirely personal. It's not a thing from the outside, but for me it's unusual because I've been very eclectic. Kind of wonderful times, isn't it? And music, again, is an influence. These sideshow bands of this type have done a lot of things. Those bands you could hear from a mile and a half, 2 miles away. Those guys are really stentorian. Lips. And that is a painting based on that. I do a lot of homages to people, and this man, Harvey Langford, the trombone player, is absolutely fantastic.
Musician who was in the league with Tommy Dorsey and all the technical and all that kind of thing. And because, again, of racial prejudice and everything, didn't have the outlet. I mean, so I tried to do a series of paintings with another Harvey in the band. Kind of funny. There's some sort of homage to these people in the Congress and stuff. And this is just an assorted picture basement. So this is not a covered library. That's Alfred Quirk up here. And this is based on using human cannonballs. And I got to tell you, man, we had covered the other human cannonballs, and they told me to show these pictures of so-and-so's cannon and so-and-so's cannon. So I had the idea of a convention that the College Association had all the cannonballs in the country appear in one place and present papers. So every one of these papers is based on somebody real track. Except for the first few of them. Superior to the others. And this one is based on, they say that something here really is commercialism, promotion. You know, when they every so often a model gets bit by a leopard or something, or a high fashion model, they try to have a pulled or roped up tiger or something. Nature of it. It's not taking nature seriously as I'm getting at it. So I'm all sort of happy. This is based on the lion. This is actually a lion trainer, but the lion be a trainer. But a few things I've done with that figure here. This is my own surface of it. I've been on the road for about 7 years. My tent is still on the road. We're still taking it out in April. And all my equipment's over there, obviously. I love that it's still going on. You know, I don't know. Tagging away from top with Michael's Magic Theater and all that. I'm on my bus and crew. This is Noah Jemison, who was in the neighborhood. He was in the freedom. My son of heaven. This was in Iowa City in 1970, well, it was Bicentennial, 76. We played, we had 10,000 people booked in one day there. At the sideshow, my dealer in New York would have flipped out that he'd known that I had carried some 30, 40 paintings in that print. I have no protection whatsoever. They were on the glass. Nothing in public, and I'm showing that 250,000 people in that one actor band in the whole time show. That not one. And just, nobody sees the
appreciate the fact you were there. And, you know, a lot of people look for that show that would never go on. He's in the skit. Are they scared of the pay? Are they going to look, you look down on him or something? He's got truck drivers and people off the street who came in. That's the reason the National Endowment liked it, because if they were trying to get that lowest common denominator from them. So they sponsored the tour members all around the country, which was nice for me because I didn't have to really just pass on the foot and got voted down and things like that. That's the sad of backwards, but you get the idea. That's inside the show, so the yellow, I chose the yellow because I like wind a lot. I wanted to glow with the grips. That's Magnet Band. You can see the park, that was an Al City community. I've been quite indoors before in my house for sure. And I carried the library and I carried the uniform, a ton of instruments. We had some fantastic bands to go to. This was in Montgomery, Alabama. I got those uniforms from the Iowa Marching Band. I got the feet for the students to go marching. And this is in Iowa City in 1976. Jim Dixon, the Lutheran minister. It's tempo, you know, a little slow. People don't really understand how fast that music is played. Good college kind of musician is kind of pale sometimes when you're doing all the tempo. Now, this was a thing I added. This was an outdoor circus for me with a dressing tent behind it. The bleachers were now, and we had continuous performances from 9:30 in the morning till about 10:30, 11 at night. And that ring was always full. We had everything under the sun appearing in there. We had mostly local talent, but I carried my own talent a little bit just to be sure, you know, that was good. But this was Stoney Lady or something like that. And we had tweet clubs and singers and rock bands and musicians and this was a wonderful award in Wisconsin. The Girl Scout troop put on their own little show. Swedish This is one of my professionals. I carried some ringers with me from time to time. I'm sure it wasn't quite straight away around with the ringers there. This fellow Ted, he's back with his Larry, Ted's tattoo fellow, was now in Des Moines. He needed a good tattoo in the back. He's asking the first bit. He wanted to trade art with me. I was really tickled. Something about myself getting a tattoo in the back. Now, this is inside the tent. What it was in that, for those of you who haven't heard of it, it was an animated display of animals, figures, whatever. You were in the middle and there was one all around you. The reason why it looks all red in there, because the red was the easiest space to get a shot in. It's very hard to photograph because it's a very low level of light. The whole show ran off of 29 feet. So we had 42 circuits of lights that would come and go and change and modulate in and out. Spotlights would come in. We never quite knew exactly what was coming next. I did in the big shapes, but we didn't know when sub-satellite phase would come in with a red phase. And I built a computer, so-called, for this that Jim Van Allen, space visitor, had his class wanted to look at. As I said, it was a model of autonomy and such and the other. And I got it all the Sears robot for all the parts. And it ran the whole thing. Just that's that little kind of simple machine. This is inside. This is when it was in the building. kinds of figures that they want. That one, for example, these figures on the ladder went forwards and backwards very slowly, and the figure on top went sideways very slowly. It was very dizzy, kind of, two minutes, kind of. It's kind of very spooky, because everything is very still. Everybody kept talking about how gay, and like the circus is gay. They make that association. Actually, it was very moody. It was kind of melancholy. It was just not gay at all. Elephant, he's a, his head, the next thing he ticks in there was at a bad angle, kept going off track. But he would raise up his feet from up his head and go jumping down. And then he drove on with the old winning style, you know, when he went out. And to the end of every show, there'd be a whole pile of peanuts on my head. Well, the kid my feet did, wouldn't know. This thing, it's hard to explain. I mean, you can't even get a movie up because imagine it was all around in a big space. You have different quality, any one thing you're looking at, and you're subliminally aware of something happening over there because there's a soundtrack. Now this was in sort of partly in the height of some of the drug thing, because we had some real experiences with this. I mean, it's fine for me. You just get stoned out of your head and watching this. And I got pretty high one night and I saw it, and it was a strange experience. This figure is a roly-boly, and so you know the roly-boly act balls. He's doing that very slowly. I must have put up, oh, the other one. I got just a few more slides. The tent was 26 feet high at the top, 60 feet long, so you can see there was quite a space in there. No, 80 feet long. More fingers. Now this is transitioning to a real world of circus, if you like. This is a show that I've been out with for 9 years now. I put this in the show, this fellow who owns the show. He was a fantastic man who was a school teacher who decided he really loved the circus. So he bought an elephant. Now that bank lent him enough money to buy an elephant with no one, nothing else. That's all he had. He bought the elephant and then he bought a lion. Just that, and I met him, and I was so impressed by his will and his imagination of things that I just started going out with him every summer. And it says been 9 years now, and now he's considered one of the best small circus in America, of its size, the one ring, very small circus. And it's absolutely first rate in that context. Good little show. And this is in September, Kyoto, Iowa, which is 36 miles from here. And one of my jobs is to have to be in charge of what they call the front door, which is in fact the floor manager, you know, people coming in and all that. And then my other job is playing the drums with the band. The band being organ back there and the trumpet player. That year is just the organ. And lettering the truck. That's how we came back this year. So I've done all the lettering in the truck. I just love it. This kind of thing. As a result of playing in the band and doing all this lettering, I've gotten more job offers than I can handle from Canadian circuses, even.
But it's a good combination for them, you know, having a drummer and a sound kind of experience.
Also, somebody can handle sound.
This is my favorite. I'm not quite through yet. I'm going to smash the trucks up more. This is way more pictorial, I think. That's a banner. Maybe that's such an old slide. Maybe that's the same rock. But that's Ted Novella, Wax and Moldy Human Robot. I did that banner for, I don't know, my gosh, 30 years ago, I don't know. I had a letter from him the other day, and he still has it, he's still using it. On the road. He was the first one of those people, I ever see a human robot in the windows of the store with a cap on the window and all that, and you're supposed to try to make them smile and the move or anything like that. Well, now this is the way, kind of way I use material from the circuit. If you go and draw, first they do now, but they didn't know for 8 years that I was an artist, and I didn't want them to know I was an artist, because as soon as they know you're an artist, they start dropping into crazy and self-consciousness. So they thought I was a sign painter, which is fine, and a drummer. And only this last year, because somebody brought a catalog and showed it to me, and they found it out. So now I'm a little more free. I didn't draw at all. I just kind of looked. But I got myself one of those Japanese automatic cameras that you don't have to focus on anything. And so I just kind of go like this. I don't even look at it. Because I don't want to see that I'm taking a picture, you know, that the pose. So I keep it on my tom-tom. And then I'll do the show, and I'll just kick my drumstick and take a picture of something. And later I find out what it was. But this kind of pose is like this, you know. It's so pretty much different from what they get into. And one time I was with Carson Barnes Circus, and we were in Mount Vernon, Iowa, and they had an art school at Cornell College. All the students came out. We were sitting lined up by a semi-trailer, and there was Shorty Sylvester, who was 3 feet high, and his wife, Dorothy. Danny Chapman, who was a tramp clown. His wife, who was wearing a leftover uniform from the Sugar Bowl from 10 years before, his Birdie Girl. A very strange collection looking at people. And our students came by, and it was the height of the hippie so-called thing then. The Shorty Sylvester was wild making Sylvester. You ever see such a weird looking bunch of people in your life? This is the kind of shot I took with my tom-tom, you know, this function. Like that, this is sort of getting a... They're not putting artistic quality, you know, but I'll use this material, you know, kind of like that pose. The cat, so that's taken right, that's how close you get to the cage, you see. That's taken right if I hold it like that to the cat, which is just about that distance from it. Which is really nice to get to know my animals a lot more. That's just some of the. That's the kind of thing I took advantage of my tom-tom shot. See, it's completely on the way I'm taking the shot is a different look than if you catch her when she's posing, you know. That's open to the effort. I mean, in that small space, it is. I don't know if you know this or not, but every time an elephant goes in the ring, they used to do what they call raking them. That is to say, they run their arm up inside them to get rid of all the bowel movements, you see, so it'd be more static in the ring. Well, now they just strain them and make them stand up like that. Try to prevent that kind of thing happening, but it happens all the time. Last year, Mary the announcer, she does do a trick, which is the only trick no other elephant does. She walks a glowing cross. And he said, no other elephant in the world performed this trick. And neither, wham, bowel move is urine. The doctor just went on for 5 minutes. And those details I can put wonderful hat. And there's just those genius. Every day that truck is used as a depository. So you get a different still life every day. I have this life. I have this every day. I just take a picture of it. There'd be something new in there. You know? And these chairs, which I've used a lot of things, to set outside my trailer and keep the same place from where you are. Everybody's trailer is exactly the same. And I would see this the morning, middle, and night outside my window. I love the way the method to go. I just had a few things. Sorry if this was not organized, but it was a short notice and I didn't expect to do it. So, next week will be John and then Joanne.